I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Jamie 5, or Jamie V for you Roman numeral people out there, of A Storm of Swords. Big chapter, lots to talk about, lots of history being released, and in my opinion, really the definitive beginning of a redemption arc for Jamie Lannister, at least seeing him through a newer sympathetic lens at this point in the story. But Matt, before we jump into all the madness of the Mad King, how are you?
Oh man, let's see here. Halloween was yesterday. I am wearing my Halloween / Thanksgiving shirt. If you can kind of see it here, move my
camera. Oh, pie, little pumpkin pie symbol on there.
Like pumpkin that. Pies, yeah, pumpkin with a pie symbol. So it kind of works for two holidays.
Very clever of you. Very it's clever. A dad joke.
Actually, it works for 3 days because I could wear it on 3/14.
Beautiful. Boom.
There we go.
Love it.
Love it. Yeah, absolutely love it. So yeah, did Halloween yesterday. That was kind of fun. According to my, annual physical with my doctor, I got to cut back on the freaking sugar and the cholesterol a little bit.
Wait, your sugar high?
Those ticked up a little high on my thing. So
diabetes gonna get you. Well, it's gonna get you, brother.
No, that's what they're saying. So like, oh, you keep running this route, you're gonna be pre-diabetic and all this stuff. So it's like, okay, all right. So finally,
yeah, you don't want that, dude.
Yeah, finally had to tell from my doctor to. She was kind of like, very politely, like, yeah, maybe you should get your ass back in the gym. Okay.
What happened to Super Gains, bros?
Bro, you have a back injury and a baby, and that'll.
And now it's super sugar bros. What is
that's this? That's what it was for this past year. Yeah. So
super glucose bros. I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah. Super insulin, bro, is what it's about to be if I don't cut out the sugar.
Yeah. And with the price of insulin, we can't afford it.
We seriously can't afford it. Yeah. So I got that going on. Man, I am just so, I think I speak for everybody who's in America who's listening to this, which is like 65% of our entire audience, is, man, I'm ready for next week to be freaking over. I'm so ready for election season to just be over.
Yeah, I'll be honest, it's getting a little chillier now, and I'm like, you know what? I'm ready for springtime, because springtime will not just bring warm weather, but it's also going to bring Dunkin' Egg. And I'm jonesing, dude. And this time of year, I always want to read Dunkin' Egg. I love Dunkin' Egg in the fall or the spring. It just feels right, especially with the way the book opens up in the springtime and the soft rain. It made the ground soft to dig a grave, which is one of my favorite opening lines.
It almost sounds as if you have a dream of spring.
I think I might, in fact.
But Jimmy, it is November 1st, which means the winds of winter are upon us.
Man, Matt.
If only they were actually upon us.
You're being kind. I think you've forgotten, but I mean, this is it, right? This is the month that I've been predicting for many years.
Oh yeah, here we go.
We are here. George has 29 days to make me look less like a liar. And it's not looking good, Matt. I don't think I would take a victory if he announced it. I said that, you know, announcement or release in 2024 November. Been saying this since like 2018 or 19. And I don't think it's happening, Matt. I don't think it's happening this month. I don't think we'll see an announcement. I don't think we'll get an update. I don't think we're going to see anything. And I don't know how I feel about that.
You know,
I'm a little demoralized.
Well, here we go. I'm looking over his, he did have a handful of, he did mention Winds of Winter the other day. So he had a handful of posts here. His first one is the October 31st, in which he basically says that he hates MAGA and Donald Trump. Don't want to get into politics, you know, super, but that's what George is saying. Then he did one about called the Canals of Braavos over here, right? And essentially he did looks like he did some a book signing, stuff like that. He met up with a lady, you know, Melisandre Creese Van Houten, right? And he did say something about this here, and he said, you know, he's talking about Bayonne, New Jersey, right? It's where he's born and raised. He said, it's nothing at all like Amsterdam. For most of my childhood, we lived in the projects on First Street, right across from Brady's Dock. Hey, it's my last name, you know. Anyway, so he talked about, he said, as much as I live Santa Fe, I miss the water, because he used to live closer to water.
He used to love watching the barges when he was a kid. That was like one of his big memories. Yeah, that's why he loves boats so much.
Yeah, so he says, one of the days I need to write about the story about Braavos we were developing for HBO. And I saw like IGN and all these other people run wild about it, because he says, oh, I would love to write this story. They shelved that one a couple years back, alas, but that does not mean I won't get back to it after Winds of Winter is done, of course. Now everyone's like, well, if you'd finish Winds, then you could write something else. I think it's just like saying, hey, you know, I would love to learn, I don't know, there's all sorts of things I would love to do,
certainly,
right? You know, that doesn't mean I'm gonna do it. It's just like saying, hey, I would love to do that.
I don't think George is focused on a timetable. I think he's just saying there's many things I'd like to do. And hey, you know what, dude, I'm guilty of this. I'm guilty of this, because do you know how many books people tell me I should read and I do genuinely want to read them, and they come back three years later to my YouTube channel and they go, dude, you still haven't read that book. And I'm like, I know, I still want to, but there's always so much time and so much energy, and you got to be in the right mood. And I don't know. It is weird, because this is the same old for everybody. But with my prediction dying this month, and for all, you know, all signs pointing towards me being wrong about a 2024 announcement, this isn't something I threw out 6 months ago. It's something I've been riding on for many years now, 5-6 years. It does feel a little deflating to me, because of probably my own ego a bit, but I'm going to try to keep the faith, dude. I'm just going to try to keep riding.
Hey, I finished, what was it? I finished, Water 7 arc of One Piece, like a month ago, and I still have yet to post my video on it. So, you know, I gotta get that going.
We all have unfinished business.
Absolutely. We all have unfinished projects, things we got to get to, stuff like that, you know, but hey, that's because Bend the Knee comes first.
I haven't paid my taxes in 10 years.
Well, geez. I just went to my first doctor's appointment this year in, you know, like 6 years. So
yeah.
There we go.
I was going to simulate a door knocking and then be like, open up, pirate. But I just decided not to do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, everything else going good, Jimmy?
Yeah, man. It's fine. I'm very busy with work. But other than that, everything's fine.
Yeah. The holiday season, it's about to kick off here. So, you know,
it's going to get wild.
It's busy time.
Yep.
Anywho, here we go. So this chapter today is kind of a big one. Jamie 5 Banger. Of a Storm of Swords. So Jamie and Brienne are in the bathhouse in Harrenhal, washing themselves before meeting Roose Bolton. Jamie feels dizzy in the hot bath and begins to tell Brienne his story, despite his own misgivings about revealing the tale. Jamie says Aerys would have bathed in wildfire if he dared. The Targaryens were all mad for fire. After the Battle of the Bells, Aerys realized that Robert Baratheon was no mere outlaw and that the Targaryens faced their greatest threat since the Blackfyre Pretenders. He began to disperse his Kingsguard to take command of the army, recalled Rhaegar from the south, and sent letters to Casterly Rock. But when Tywin never responded, Aerys commanded his pyromancers to place caches of wildfire throughout King's Landing. Lord Chestold, the current hand, found out what was going on and tried to stop Aerys from continuing his mad course, but Aerys had him killed and named the pyromancer Rosart, the man who had burned Rickard Stark alive, his hand. All this time, Jaime remained in the throne room guarding the king and his secrets. After the Trident, Aerys sent his wife and Prince Viserys to Dragonstone, but kept Elia and her children in the Red Keep because he thought that Prince Luwin Martell had betrayed Rhaegar during the battle and thus needed Elia and the children as hostages to ensure Dorne's loyalty. With wildfire in place, Aerys told Rosart, "The traitors want my city, but I'll give them naught but ashes. Let Robert be king over charred bones and cooked meat." Aerys may have thought that the great fire would kill everyone, but transformed him into a dragon, much as Arryon Brightflame had thought. When the Lannisters appeared before King's Landing, Varys advised them to keep the gates closed, but at the advice of Pycelle, Aerys led in the Lannisters, who proceeded to sack King's Landing. Jaime felt he had to act after the Mad King commanded him to bring his father's head. He killed Rosart, then returned to the throne room and killed King Aerys. Days later, he hunted down and killed the remaining two of Aerys' pyromancers, Gargius and Belus, so that their secrets would die with them. When Brienne asks why nobody else knows this tale, Jaime tells her that the Kingsguard are sworn to protect the king's secrets and that Eddard would have never believed his tale. Jaime then nearly passes out from the heat, and Brienne calls out for Qyburn. When they are brought before Roose Bolton, who tells them he chose to wed Walder Frey because Lord Walder Frey offered him his bride's weight in silver. When Brienne inquires after Arya, Bolton mysteriously states that she was lost for a time, but she has been found and is to be returned safely to the north. Bolton tells them he is awarded Harrenhal to Vargo Hoat because the goat was a stranger to the Seven Kingdoms and did not know the prize was poison. He means the curse of Lord Tywin for Hoat was not aware of what Tywin does to traitors such as Tarbex and the Rains. Bolton explains that he has a small problem because the goat wishes to return Jaime to Rickard Karstark to claim the Lord's reward for his daughter's hand in marriage. Vargo had Jaime's hand chopped off and sent to a grisly lord as a grisly token to Lord Tywin, feeling he would be well safe in Carhold. What he doesn't know is Rob has beheaded Lord Karstark, and the goat is now doomed. But since Vargo is in Bolton's employ, Tywin might feel that Bolton was responsible for maiming as well. Jaime agrees to carry word to his father, absolving Bolton of all his blame. But as for Brienne, Bolton tells her it would be unconscionable for me to deprive Lord Vargo of both of his prizes. So a ton of stuff happens.
In this chapter.
So Jimmy, I think we'll kind of have to just do like big major takeaways, big points for this whole chapter today. So do we want to start with, I think we'll just start at the beginning, right? Which is Jamie's realization, which I think is one of the best moments in the books. It's one of the best thing. I mean, Jamie is one of the reasons I love A Storm of Swords so much, because it's the first time we get that sort of other side of the coin thing. And you begin to see, well, okay, maybe Jamie isn't as terrible of a person as we thought. Keep in mind, right? This is the Why I Love the Reread segment that we always say when you're going chapter by chapter. Mm-hmm. We just listened in last week in Davos. Stannis Baratheon talked about the toughest decision he ever had to make was, do I stay loyal to my king or do I go with my brother? Do I go with my blood? It's the same decision Jaime Lannister has to make.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right here. And it's just something, an interesting parallel between the two.
And let's be honest, you know, Stannis is not a favorable character
You could even say he's possibly an antagonist at some point. Jaime has been an antagonist up until this point of Storm of Swords, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that makes them so complex, in my opinion, is that I would say that they did the right thing. Both of them did the right thing, but they neither were ever thanked for it. Mm-hmm. Do you think Robert Baratheon ever said, "Stannis, my brother, I love you so much. Thank you, man." Absolutely not. Does Tywin treat Jaime with any, like, "Hey, thanks for not cutting my head off"? Yeah. No, none.
Stannis even says that. Well, the funny thing is that Robert then gives Stannis Dragonstone, which Stannis takes as a slight.
As a slight, yeah, because Stannis is a little bit petty. Yeah,
right. Because Stannis is like, in some degree with that. I know we're talking about Jaime here, but it's all kind of together. Because I think the way Stannis kind of phrases it is that Storm's End should be the new Dragonstone.
Yes.
Do you think Stannis is right in that, or should it still be Dragonstone? I kind of think Stannis is right in that. Robert should have turned Storm's End into the new Dragonstone.
There might have been a logistical reason for that, like positioning.
Just because the water, because it does kind of keep them safe as they're kind of,
yeah. And also there's possible like things underground at Dragonstone we haven't got to yet. I mean, he might have been savvy to some of that stuff. I'm not sure.
In theory, Joffrey, if Robert hadn't died and Joffrey wasn't, you know, like a terrible whatever, Joffrey would have been moved to Dragonstone when he came of age. And then Stannis would have, like, I don't know where Stannis would have went, because Renly had Storm's End.
Well, maybe that's what Stannis was thinking.
Yeah.
Stannis was saying, "Oh, he's putting me here to make it look good, and then he's going to get rid of me." Who knows?
Yeah.
So my big thing is, though, they're complex characters, and for the good decisions they do make, they actually kind of get burned for him in some way. I mean, Stannis a little less so than Jaime, because Jaime, in this chapter, provides what I think is a pretty good indictment of Eddard Stark and his attitude towards honor and nobility and morality in Westeros. And he's saying, you know, Eddard Stark would have never believed me. Because Eddard was so blinded by the fact that the Lannisters had done bad things that he couldn't imagine Jaime doing any, like, he truly believed he knew Jaime, but I don't think he did. And I don't think we knew Jaime until this book, right? Where we start getting a perspective. And that's what I said, this is the turning point of the redemption arc. I mean, we almost have like a confession of sorts from him, talking about the hardest point ever in his entire life. And then at the end, he pathetically passes out from heat in a tub. You know, he's very sympathetic in this moment. That was on purpose. George wanted you to feel sympathy for him at the end. And Brienne comes to to save him. And in many ways, you could argue that this trip with Brienne is what will save Jaime and will lead to his redemption, possibly. I still think that we're going to get a very circular arc that isn't that off from what the show was, in my opinion. Who knows? I don't know that for a fact. I could also see him doing Valonqar and killing Sir. I could see all the aspects of it. But regardless, very important to build sympathy for the character. And he does so while giving us a new perspective on past events that we had already heard about through the eyes of someone else. And then passing out at the end in a very almost like sad and pathetic way because of his current status, like losing his hand and infection and all these things. So just a masterful job. And makes Jaime so much better of a character. It's so good.
Yeah, agreed. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you said, you know, there is a parallel between those two, right? Passing out in both ways, and now he's passing it in Brienne's arms too, mm-hmm. right? And it's almost as if he is also having he is having a transformation, right? Now he has the gold hand and everything. And finally sharing like that secret with someone and talking about it, like, because I don't think it's ever said anywhere if he has had this like this full conversation with Cersei. You'd have to imagine that he probably would,
probably,
but maybe he didn't, and maybe Bran is the first person he's telling.
And do you think Cersei would care?
No, probably not.
She would not care. No,
yeah,
not at all.
Yeah. Which is crazy and wild. But yeah, I mean, this does sort of set up another kind of thing about like, hey, theory, is there still all that wildfire there? Is there still wildfire caches all over the place? Yeah.
A lot of wildfire set up. And also remember, Jaime has dreams about wildfire at some point and others burning. So what I want to propose to you, Matt, is I know we have the Sept of Baelor scene, which actually is an amazing scene in the show. It's set up very well. It's pretty tremendous. And there are breadcrumbs here to lead us to believe that wildfire is probably going to be used again. And there's a stash of it in King's Landing in the Dragon Pit. However, my opinion, Matt, is that this is going to play out in the final battle with the others for the Long Night. And my biggest reason is the Long Night is not just going to happen at Winterfell like it did in the show. That happened logistically because of budget. They only shot at one location, right? They couldn't shoot that over and over and over.
Well, yeah, again. It was like they filmed for like 50 days or something. It's like the biggest battle ever.
It's one of the bigger misses of the show, just in the end. But I understand like the need to do it in one look. I get it. But this is the beauty of books, is that we don't have to worry about a budget, right? So if the others don't show up on King's Landing's doorstep, this all this like ignoring the existential threat for petty human squabbles, which George is getting at the entire time through the story, would be for naught. And I just don't think that that's how this happens. I think that the final battle actually does happen in King's Landing with the others. So I think that the Wildfire Cache most likely will come to play in the final battle and not the Sept of Baelor.
I've thought we've talked about that too. Because I've still always loved the idea that Dany dies in the final battle, like saving Westeros.
And I agree. Yeah.
She doesn't actually sit the Iron Throne or any of that stuff. Is that her whole purpose is that she's ultimately then loved because she makes the decision to sort of like sacrifice herself or something. And Wildfire certainly could be part of that. And essentially you just blow up King's Landing, which would also be sort of, in a way, you could then kind of go to a route of like
propaganda.
Well, is that it does end up going to like a democracy type thing, which is the way the show went, which I, like maybe you have a king brand, but they're chosen or something like that. Cause I feel like the feudal system is still something that is challenged. And that's a big part of breaking the wheel. And all
George is criticizing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Dany certainly could be the one to break the wheel and the cycle of all of that stuff. If she is the one who destroys King's Landing, and then King's Landing's gone, and then it, kind of goes back. Yeah.
Yeah. I like this a lot. I mean, I think also like, there's a lot to be said about like the history and the Targaryen name and the bloodline, and maybe that can't exist for them to move on. Like maybe that has to be gone. Jon still exists. So that brings up a wedge issue that people could platform off of for the Targaryens. But I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how I get there, but I do get the vibes that Wildfire is being hinted at here very purposefully, and that it most likely will come into play much later in the story and not just at the Sept of Baelor. But who knows? I mean, it's hard to say. We would probably get those answers and wins, though, at least if it's going to be Sept of Baelor. We will see those answers and wins a winner. So we need a book.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to pull up, actually, I'm going to go ahead and pull up some stuff from the Song of Ice and Fire reread subreddit. So, because this is it's like a two-part chapter. So this is, we're going to talk about the Jamie part here, too, because this is something we talked probably here and there about, but so essentially it says, so Jamie tells his story to the side of Robert's rebellion, that Robert fought for pride and glory and not for love, and what was happening inside King's Landing while everyone else was fighting a war. He said, there's a line where he says, "Soiled my white cloak, I wore gold armor that day." In Jamie's mind, he was a Lannister that day and not a member of the Kingsguard. He had already decided what should be done, yet no one seems to remember. Since Jamie passed so much time chasing and killing pyromancers, how's come no one knew of the plan to burn King's Landing? Yeah, so nobody else seems to know that as well, even though there are pyromancers out there that would know. And you'd have to imagine that all of those caches were put there over time and everything.
An accidental blow up is not out of the question, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like Dany actually does save the day, accidentally hits these caches, blows up, has a ton of casualties, and ends up in her being,
because Tyrion has been having some produced for him, and you'd have to imagine maybe it's not all used in the Battle of the Blackwater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, that isn't that interesting. But also, like we're assuming that Aerys was truthful about who he told about it, right? Like, we always have to guess at who's lying. And also, let's take another step back. Jamie could be lying about some of this stuff. We don't know. Right. Like Jamie might have made himself look a little better than it wouldn't be beyond him. I don't think. I mean, we want to trust him because we want to like him at this point, especially on a reread. But who's to say Aerys didn't tell somebody else about the caches? Who knows? Maybe Varys knows about it. He has birds everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Varys is going to be with an invading force coming to take King's Landing.
Yeah, maybe they blow it up and they make it seem like it was Cersei that did it.
Ooh.
And then, especially if you blow up the Sept of Baelor, and then it's more of like a propaganda thing.
You just nailed it.
To make it seem like, to use all that propaganda and everything against
you. You just nailed it, though. I mean, how cool would that be? It makes the Fagon storyline even more interesting. And this is why the show not having Fagon was a detriment. I heard people say, oh, it doesn't really matter. He's a red herring. No. It matters so much politically throughout the realm. It makes Dorne more relevant. I mean, I could go on and on.
I'm not Sansa, if he's going to marry, because of the Targaryen, the five, dude, Ashford Meadow theory.
I love what you're saying, though. Like, I love what you're saying. And guess what that would actually kind of lead to a little bit? That would lead to us feeling having some sympathy for Cersei, which at this point in the story,
you kind of do.
Yeah, you're at least pitying. She's
doing her walk of shame and everything, and yeah.
And it's like Jaime, right? Like, we need that something to get her over the edge, maybe heading towards a redemption, and maybe that's where her and Jaime split. Is that?
And maybe that's ultimately going to be Jaime, you know, the biggest wild card. Because the show actually expanded the role of the Faith bigger than what it will be in Winds of Winter, because they didn't have young Griff. So yeah. I think the show said, okay, well, we need to expand Cersei's storyline out, and it's going to be much heavier with the Faith than it would be since young Griff isn't coming over.
Yeah.
Whereas, so maybe that is going to be that piece of the puzzle there,
man.
Cause the Faith is still going to have to do something in Winds of Winter, but is she going to blow up the Sept of Baelor to, yeah.
So I like the way you said it about it being propaganda.
Because I think
Varys knowing about it, blowing it up, blaming it on Cersei. It gets her out of it, right?
Right.
She gets saved. I think you have to get Cersei out of King's Landing, because I do believe Fagon takes the throne, by the way.
Well, because I think it's going to be a trial by combat in which she's going to choose Robert Strong, the Mountain, right? Yeah. And the Faith is going to use the Gravedigger, which is Sandor Clegane, the Hound.
Dude.
And
dude,
so
all of that tying into Fagon coming in.
Do they just kill each other, right? And then you have a situation where it's kind of, well, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, that's going to be, but I feel like that's what the route I would probably go is. I'd have the Hound and the Mountain fight, and then you can get Clegane Bowl out of the way. Because I just don't see it happening the same way it did in the show, where it's almost like a weird throwaway moment. It won't matter.
It will not. It would definitely will not. And the Gravedigger being placed in a pretty good spot. You know, you still got to get in the King's Landing.
Yeah, because the Game Bowl in the show didn't even matter. Because King's Landing is blowing up. Like, it literally was just a totally useless moment in the show.
It was sick, but yeah,
it was as useless as the horse that Arya rides off on.
The pale mare. I mean, there's some symbolism
but there. It's not like the horse seemed like Arya was going to go kill Daenerys, because the pale horse, and she's dead.
Yeah, she lost all her abilities to do anything after that episode.
Nothing happened with it. That is literally the dumbest. Well, I don't know.
We don't want to make that proclamation. Depends on the day,
four,
bro.
Episode four of season eight was, but I don't know. That might be the most useless thing in the entire show. But
to your point about like Fagon. So I'm a firm believer that Cersei will be removed from King's Landing and head back to Casterly Rock, where she will eventually have a showdown with Tyrion. And I actually think that there's a possibility that Cersei ends up taking and raising King's Landing. I have a lot of theories about this stuff, but if let's say that the wildfire caches are used as propaganda against Cersei when they blow up because of Fagon and Illyrio and Varys having these ideas or knowledge, and then Cersei is blamed, she's outed, but she escapes over to Casterly Rock. That puts her in a good position to be in Casterly Rock. If Fagon gets on the throne, Dany arrives, there's a usurper on the throne now. Like, it really does play into a lot of the things that have been like hinted at. So I like your theory. I think that that's kind of cool. I just wonder what happens with Cersei after that. My big theory has always been that Tyrion will burn Casterly Rock, but I've also had this idea that, like, as they fight the others in the north and they're coming back, that when they arrive back to King's Landing, Cersei has come back and has like raised King's Landing, and they have the final fight there, but everyone's dead. Like, I've always thought that would be interesting, because Cersei would then become like a Sauron type character from Lord of the Rings, because he raises the Shire at the end of the books. Like, we get back from our journey and the Shire is gone.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit, that's crazy, right? Yeah. I've always thought that George would kind of pay homage to that, because I know that's one of his favorite parts of Lord of the Rings. So I wonder how he could do something like that. But maybe Winterfell being raised, halfway through the series is the raising of the Shire moment. Maybe that's kind of what George's homage is. I'm not really sure, but I've always believed that Cersei will be outed and then wind up at Castle Rock. Tyrion has had dreams of burning Castle Rock. We have the Valonqar prophecy. Like, there's a lot of things that could line up there too. I mean, it's fascinating stuff. I still believe Tyrion rides a dragon at some point in the series because he had dragon dreams. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think he's a secret Targaryen. But somehow I think he rides a dragon and I think he burns Castle Rock.
Yeah. Well, there's the stone dragon that needs to awaken too.
There's a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to go down a rabbit hole real quick?
Sure.
Do you think, obviously this is in the book, this is more conversation and context around the Mad King and his mindset going into why he did these things, what he did. Are you a believer that Bran as a three-eyed raven interacting with the timeline made Aerys go mad, or do you think that that's me?
I don't know.
I'm back and forth.
I don't know. You know, I will say one of my early thoughts of season 8 was the moment where Daenerys tells Jon, when she says, "Do not tell anyone about this," right? So I kind of thought, and then of course we got everything, the whole Night King thing ended the next episode, so it kind of ruined all of those things for me. But I kind of thought, I was like, this might be, if they wanted to do a Bran going back in time thing, like this could be the moment that they go back to and like Bran like switches. Or, you know, Jimmy, every holiday season, I find myself with a dilemma. And my wife's extended family Christmas, we do a white elephant gift, and I never know what to get.
Well, Matt, spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list. All in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling.
Yeah, they scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their website. Things like chocolate from around the world, handcrafted cribbage boards, wine glasses, bourbon sets, just about anything you want to find that would be a unique or uncommon gift they have in their selection.
And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts that you can personalize.
And from holiday host to hostess gift to the coolest finds for kids to hits for everyone from book lovers to diehard sports fans, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selections you can find just anywhere.
And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee. That's uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
John doesn't tell anyone, and then, you know, it goes in a different direction. But I kind of thought, because like then John told them, and I was like, ooh, that could be like the Night King's walking up, which we did see in the next episode or whatever. And then it's like, uh-oh, this is the moment I have. Because I thought that that was maybe the way the brand thing was going to go, was when we saw the Night King walking up, I was like, oh, he might just like, nope, and go back in time and like, you know, like, all right. This is kind of like X-Men Days of Future Past is the way they kind of do that.
Right.
Where they're
right.
constantly like going back in time, like a couple weeks or whatever to keep like chasing because they're being chased by the Sentinels and everything. And I kind of thought maybe that would be the route that they went, is that Bran would go back in time just like a little bit or influence the past or sort of like, and I thought that would be that moment. So I wouldn't put that out of the realm of possibilities that Bran has to go back and do something like that. We'll have to see. The whole seeing Hodor in the show really solidifies all of the Bran as possibly going to go back in time travel, you know, type of a anything. I mean, you know, to go back and go do anything. It's certainly there. I don't know if George is going to go that route. If he, I don't know that he needs it in the books.
It opens up a huge can of worms when you open up timeline stuff. But as a sci-fi writer, I think George, one, could handle it, and two, is going to do it, actually.
Yeah. It's just, does he go back and do it because having Eris set up all the wildfire everywhere is the thing that could,
that saves humanity?
That saves humanity. Right.
Dude,
it's like it kicks off this war
that
and all of these things.
So sick.
But if it is, perhaps the fact that Eris put wildfire everywhere was the thing that caused, you know, and then, hey. If Jamie's decision here might be the, you know, because if Aerys blows everything up, then there's not enough wildfire for when the White Walkers come. Yeah, it's kind of
this could, and I know some
if
people
it's,
are saying
if it's pulled off correctly, it could be like
it could be excellent,
the most epic thing ever.
It's also very reminiscent of some stuff I've read from Gene Wolfe, who's a legend in sci-fi fantasy. And George idolized him in many ways and paid great respects to Gene Wolfe. There's actually a Book of the New Sun references in A Song of Ice and Fire, but very Wolfian, I would say. So do not count it out. I think that this is certainly in the realm of possibility that the series could go this way. And George could do it. I mean, he's written so much good sci-fi and I think is inspired by great people. So that, I love that, dude. I love that idea.
Yeah, you just have to pull it off.
It'd be sick.
I mean, it's a lot. I mean,
it's a lot. I mean, these books are not easy to read.
Is that the plan the whole time? You know, I mean, so yeah, it's a lot to pull off, which is probably why it's taken him so freaking long.
And just throwing in also all the subplots and world building and right. There's so much.
Okay. Let's move on to a few other points here. So it says the king reminded Luan Martell graciously that he held Elia and sent him to take command out of the 10,000 Dornishmen coming up the King's Road. So the comment here in this on the subreddit on this sort of response to this chapter is, I guess that means Jaime knows that Dorne has a low population in case of an upcoming war. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that he's like, well, I'm going to take Elia. I'm going to hold her here and not send her out. That is something I think that gets overlooked a lot, is the relationship between Aerys and Rhaegar during this whole thing. And I really hope we get it. George says he's not going to include any more POV characters, but God, I've always hoped we get like a Harrenhal. I always hoped we would get a Harrenhal chapter.
Oh, well, we probably will through Bran's perspective. So it's not a new POV. It's just Bran kind of orating this event.
I guess I just always wanted totally a valid Rhaegar chapter.
Yeah, now you might see it through the eyes of Vhagar, through the eyes of Bran, which would be a really cool way of writing. But I think a Harrenhal chapter is 100% in the cards. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing I thought we would get in season 8. But
we're also going to get the tourney of Harrenhal on Broadway soon. So
that's going to, yeah, that'll.
He said it'll have answers. He did say that.
Well, there we go. I'm down for it. Yeah, we're totally going. And then a little bit here too. It says, and Prince Rhaegar returned from the south and persuaded his father to swallow his pride and summon my father, which Jaime's saying that, which is Lord Tywin. So yeah, I mean, Rhaegar comes back and says, we need Tywin Lannister. Oof, that's a...
Let's not like forget Pycelle is also opening the, convincing him to open the gates. Like, all this ties in so much to the story that we're reading. It's so cool. Yeah.
So, and then the comment here is, and what could Jaime actually know about Lyanna? Since three of the men of the King's Guard were at the Tower of Joy, they probably knew about a child if there is one. Could Jaime know too? Because Jaime talks about you're also supposed to know their secrets.
Well, he might know that there's something, and maybe he could guess, but I don't think. I don't know.
That is one of the things is the Jaime Rhaegar relationship. Like, there's only like brief little tiny mentions here and there.
Cersei liked him and he didn't like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was not a fan of Rhaegar.
Yeah. That's who she should have been married to.
It would have probably worked out better for her in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would have worked out for everybody.
Yeah, honestly, in the long run. Been fine.
We would except maybe, you know, once he still reads some book and finds out that Song of Ice and Fire and there's a, you know.
It was eventually gonna collapse, huh?
Yeah.
Prophecy always leads to bad things.
Totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, there's some other things here. Varys always seems to give Aerys fine advice, pointing traitors, not opening the gates, which is weird. Why he was pardoned and remained master of Whispers. On the other side, Pycelle did help quickening King's Landing fall, seemingly helping the Lannisters.
I think Varys staying as a Whisperer is simply because he's so damn good at his job and has so much information that it would actually be a detriment to lose him, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, and then he's plotting against essentially behind Robert's back. Right.
Varys has a whole nother thing going on. And again, in the books, far deeper. Far more important than what it ended up being in the show, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything else you want to talk about in sort of the Jaime portion of this before we move on to essentially which like another chapter, which is the second part of this, which is all this stuff.
No, this is kind of what I wanted to go into. I mean, I think this is our final, like, hey, the Red Wedding's about to happen. You guys should have predicted it by now moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, this is a huge chapter. It's sort of in two parts here. So now we move on to the other part, which is essentially, right, the Roose Bolton marrying a Frey thing moment, which is another indication that things are weird with them. Arya is going to be found soon.
Yeah, Arya's found. What is this?
Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting because we just had an Arya chapter, a little bit ago. So you're, as the reader, thinking first time, like, oh, they found Arya out there.
And
which is funny also, because he was Arya was Roose Bolton's cupbearer and he didn't know it was her.
Yes. And also we were both, as readers, we're sitting there thinking, that doesn't sound quite right.
Right. Yeah. Because he was her cupbearer.
And yeah.
Didn't realize it. Do you like it more in the show, or do you like it more that it's Roose Bolton, or do you like it more that it's Tywin in the show?
You mean like the Harrenhal thing?
The Harrenhal Arya cupbearer stuff.
I think it is better with Tywin. I think that was a good change.
I do yeah. too. I think I liked it. It certainly felt more. Is it because he in the show with it being Tywin, it feels more dangerous. Whereas in the books, you're kind of like, you know, when you're reading, you're like, yeah, but Roose Bolton's sworn to House Stark. So it's like something weird's going on here. And so he's more so sort of pushing towards the Red Wedding. Whereas with Tywin in the show, they're more pushing to the idea like, ooh, this is dangerous. And it sort of makes Jack and Hagar feel much more important to Arya.
Yes.
Yeah. It's one of those things that the show changes that's interesting to me that kind of works both ways.
Yeah, it's not like Roose was a bad pick because it was the original pick for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. And then Tywin being there adds a whole another level. Also just makes Tywin a more interesting character, right? Because sure. Like we kind of like the way Tywin treats Arya. We're like, man, he's kind of fair in some ways.
Yeah, it gives you a little, it makes you not feel as bad about Tywin, which is
Charles Dance is just the man, right? So him being on screen more is never a bad thing. Not that the Roose Bolton actor isn't good. He's great as well.
Yeah. So now we have Roose Bolton marrying a Frey, and at this point in time, you don't know that the Freys are like totally terrible. You're kind of like, oh, that could be a good thing.
First time read, second read.
Second time read, you know it's bad. But the first time,
you know it's bad. This is your final warning. This is like there's a new Northern Alliance, essentially, and the powers are about to switch. I mean, it's very obvious, painfully so, because we know what happens next. So,
yeah, exactly. So Roose Bolton shrugged. Arya Stark was lost for a time. It was true, but now she has been found. I mean to see her returned safely to the North. Because right now, you also think, if you're reading this for the first time, that, oh, like, they're still going to be, you know, making a deal with Jaime. Like, Jaime is still a piece of this puzzle, not, oh, hey, actually, I'm secretly working with the Lannisters.
And obviously, Brienne is not a part of this deal and is going to be offered up almost as like a sacrifice to Vargo Hoat. That's an indicator that Catelyn Stark is out of the game completely. Like, the Starks are not being considered in any facet. Like, we do not need to make sure we're doing right by the Starks. There will be no retaliation because we're literally going to bury their house.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Which is crazy. Because you're like, oh, Rob's been winning these wars and everything. But you can see, and it is a thread that when you look at like the Catelyn chapters, is slowly by slowly the Starks are losing control. And all of the things that happen to the Starks losing control actually happen outside of their chapters, which is crazy. You know what I mean? It's weird. Yeah. Like, and then you get back to their chapters and you just see them sort of struggling, but they still kind of seem to be somewhat in command of everything. But you can kind of see all of the pieces around it. Yeah, just kind of slowly closing. And this is definitely one wondering. And then Jaime has this exchange. He says, of course, there is Lord Carstock's offer to consider as well. He promises the hand of his daughter to the man who brings him your head. Leave it to your goat to get it backwards, says Jaime.
Also, there was a goat in House of the Dragon this year. Let's not forget.
Yep.
That's a little Easter egg.
Yeah. So, yeah, they talked a little about the curse of Harren the Black, the curse of Tywin Lannister. Bolton held out his goblet and Elmar refilled it silently. Our goat should have considered the Tarbexar reins. They might have warned him how your Lord Father deals with betrayal. There are no Tarbexar reins, said Jaime. My point precisely. Lord Vargo doubtlessly hoped that Lord Stannis would triumph at King's Landing and thence confirm him as him in his possession of this castle in gratitude for his small part in the downfall of House Lannister. He gave a dry chuckle. He knows little of Stannis Baratheon either, I fear. That one might have given him Harrenhal for his service, but he would have given him a noose for his crimes as well. A noose is kinder than what he'll get from my father. By now, he has come to the same realization. With Stannis broken and Renly dead, only a Stark victory can save him from Lord Tywin's vengeance. But the chances of that grow perishly slim. Yeah, and this is like Jaime and Roose Bolton talking.
Yeah.
So even Jaime at this moment, you know, thinks, ooh, it's not looking great for the Starks.
Yeah, and he's also been around court, right? Like, he's just like Tyrion. He might not be as like outwardly cunning. I think it's from a more nihilistic, apathetic standpoint, and he's very disenfranchised with people in general. So I just don't think he cares. But like, Jaime knows the winds have changed at this point.
Yeah, and you can see, I mean, you can sort of keep going here, you know. Then Bran says, King Robb has won every battle while losing the Freys, Karstarks, Winterfell, and the North. A pity the wolf is so young. Boys of 16 always believe they are immortal and invincible. An older man would bend the knee, I'd think. After a war, there is always peace, and with peace, there is always pardons. For the Robb Starks, at least, not for the likes of Vargo Hoat. Bolton gave him a small smile. Both sides have made use of him, but neither will shed a tear at his passing. The brave companions did not fight in the Battle of the Blackwater, and yet they died all the same. You'll forgive me if I do not mourn. You have no pity for a wretched doomed goat, but the gods must. Else why deliver you into his hands? Bolton chewed another chunk of meat. Carhold is smaller and meaner than Harrenhal, but it lies well beyond the reach of the lion's claws. Once wed to Alice Karstark, Hope might be a lord in truth. If he could collect some gold from your father, so much the better. But he would have delivered you to Lord Rickard, no matter how much Lord Tywin paid. His price would be the maid and said refuge. But to sell you, he must keep you. And the Riverlands are full of those who would gladly steal you away. Glover and Tallhard were broken at Duskendale, but remnants of their hosts are still abroad. With the mountains slaughtering the stragglers, 1,000 Karstarks prowl the land south and east of Riverrun hunting you. Elsewhere are dairymen left lordless and lawless, packs of four-footed wolves, and the Lightning Lord's outlaw bands. Dondarrion would gladly hang you and the goat together from the same tree. The Lord of the Dreadfort sopped up some of the blood with a chunk of bread. Harrenhal was the only place Lord Vargo could hope to hold you safe, but here his brave companions are much outnumbered by my own men and Sir Aenys and his Freys. No doubt he feared I might return you to Sir Edmure of Riverrun, or worse, send you to your father. Yeah, but by maiming you, he meant to remove your sword as a threat, gain himself grisly token, and send your father in diminishing your value from me. For he is my man, and I am King Rob's man. Thus, his crime is mine, or may seem so in your father's eye. And therein lies my small difficulty. He glazed at Jamie, his pale eyes unblinking. You want me to absolve you of blame, to tell my father this stump is no work of yours. Jamie laughed. My lord, send me to Cersei and I'll sing a sweet song, sweetest song as you want. Any other answer he knew, and Bolton would give him back to the goat. So right here you have Roose Bolton.
Vampire symbolism.
A lot of vampire symbolism, right? Who says that I'm King Rob's man, even though they're talking about King Rob is sort of losing, right? Yeah. And Roose Bolton, I think, for his house, I think Roose Bolton, even though, you know, we're Stark, you know, we want to root for the Starks and everything, I think Roose Bolton makes the right decision. Because
he's about to be gifted Winterfell in the north. I mean, he's gonna be Lord Paramount. I mean, it's a huge win for him.
Well, not only that, but I mean, he's looking at the winds and which way they're blowing, and he's like, Robb Stark's lost Winterfell. He's mm-hmm. betrayed the Freys. The Karstarks aren't with him. Everyone out here is searching for Jaime Lannister.
And here you are.
And here you are. So he's got all the pieces, and he's like, well, I get to make the chess move that nobody else gets to make.
And Rob is not bending the knee. Mm-hmm. Roose is willing to make peace, which is what they want. So Roose is taking the more kingly, you know, more appropriate decisions, which puts him in a better light. I mean, it all makes sense. Also, let's not forget, Catelyn tried to get Rob to bend the knee in the last Catelyn Rob chapter, and he refused. And here we are again. Everyone's like, man, just bend the knee, dude. Like, it'll be fine. Like, you're protected.
Mm-hmm.
And, but hey, to be fair to Rob, his father bent the knee and told a lie to save his life and then still got his head lopped off. So, like, I don't necessarily, like, things have changed in Westeros. The rules of the game have changed, and they're going to change again at the Red Wedding whenever they break the sacred oath of being underneath someone's house breaking bread. So maybe Rob actually has a point in not bending the knee.
Yeah, I don't think Rob can't bend the knee because he has nothing to go back to.
Yeah, you're right.
Rob is totally screwed. There's nothing that Rob could do at this point. Like, it's, I mean, it's over. I mean, if he goes back to Winterfell at this point, unless he can go back to Winterfell, rally the troops, which are already pretty, like, upset and dispersed and all over the place.
Yeah, it's over for him. Like, there are no moves to get out because everything's been set. Like, he could never get the Freys back. The Boltons want the power. They're giving the Lannisters what they want. Like, at this point, Rob's dead. He's actually already dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's really nothing he can do at this point. Yeah. I mean, at best, he could go back and take Winterfell and retake Winterfell, because really, like, Theon and the Greyjoys don't really want Winterfell because it's too far inland and all these things. He doesn't really know that. So if he goes back to Winterfell and takes it, he's just hiding out until Joffrey would send an army to say, yeah, it's game over now. Like, come out or we're burning. Yeah. So Rob's totally screwed at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ominous chapter.
It is. And next is a Tyrion chapter.
Oh yes. Let's go.
They do end with a little Tyrion talk here about him being married to Sansa. And talking about the only thing that could part them is the gods.
Yeah. We'll see about that.
Yep. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see about that. So
Matt, before we sign off though, we had some breaking news.
What's that?
It's not Winds of Winter, so don't get too excited. There is an early development Game of Thrones movie being made currently at Warner Brothers. Where's this from? This came from Google News, and I'm verifying it right now. And it is on the Westerosi's Twitter account. Mm-hmm. And the Hollywood Reporter is reporting on it. And the rumor is that it's the Doom of Valyria.
Okay, that could be a sweet movie.
It's a film developed around George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones series. So, there's a lot of, if you go look, there's a lot of rumors. It seems like the popular one is that this is going to be the Doom of Valyria, but people are also saying, who knows, maybe it's Harrenhal, Tourney of Harrenhal. I don't think that'll be it. Some people are saying it's going to be the Conquest. And then you want to hear this? So this is crazy. This is just a rumor. They're going to redo the series in an abridged version in movies. There's no way, right? Like, no, it's impossible. It's impossible.
It's too soon.
It would be bad. Like, I don't think it'd be good.
It's way too soon.
I think Doom of Valyria is what
it's going to be. I think Doom of Valyria, and you know who I'd go get to freaking do it?
Dennis.
Yeah. If I'm Warner Brothers right now, I'm going to Dennis Villanueva and I'm saying blank check.
Dude, I'm so proud of you for taking
the chance to
pronounce his name, because I know I can't pronounce it.
I think that's how it's pronounced, isn't it?
Villanueva? I don't. I've heard it 80 different ways. So I just say the Dune guy. I just say the Blade Runner Dune guy.
Because he's already filming. You know, it's interesting. Maybe that is who they want, because
he has a secret film.
Well,
He
has a secret film.
Oh no.
They moved
Dune. Don't get me excited.
They moved Dune Messiah's production up by a whole year.
Bro, don't do this to me.
Who else would they get to do it?
I mean, somebody, but like I would be much more thrilled if it was Denny.
You'd have to look at who's been working with Warner Brothers a lot recently, and who do they like?
Well, it's up to him though, because he's the one that like he calls the shots essentially now, and he has like a plan. Like Rendezvous with Rama, he wants to make that. It's a classic sci-fi. There was another one, and then Dune Messiah, and then he said there was a secret project that he wanted to work on. Maybe this is it, dude.
Because I think Dune Messiah is it. I think they're done after that.
I think
Dune Messiah is going to be Dune. It seems like it's going to be Dune Messiah and Children of Doom, one movie.
Yeah, he's going to make another Dune movie. Let's just say he's going to make a trilogy, right? But yeah, he wants to make Rendezvous with Rama. There's another named one I can't remember. And then he said a project that has not been revealed yet. So this might be it. I mean, who knows? I'm not going to get too excited because like we can't have nice things with Warner Brothers anymore.
It's hard to say. I'm still holding out hope that, I mean, well, Dune 2 was a nice thing of Warner Brothers. So I mean, give them that.
Hey, every now and then they can cook.
And freaking Joker 2 was trash. Although James Gunn did try to work with God, what's his name? Anyway, the director of that.
Yeah.
And that's trash. And Batman, the Penguin is really good. The Penguin is getting episodes on IMDb rated as high as Game of Thrones episodes. And I know it's not something you're into, but the Batman one, the first Robert Pattinson Batman I loved it. I think it's my favorite Batman movie.
Well, I don't care what Warner Brothers cut the budget for House of Dragons, so I'm still mad at them.
I know. We still have to wait. I'm holding out hope, just like for Winds of Winter. I still am waiting to see, you know, the Superman, because I think, or the Superman movie, because I think everything James Gunn has done has been like pure fire. I mean, he's like never missed.
So. I wish I gave a single shit about DC Comics.
I know, but it's a piece of the puzzle, because
no, you're right. You're right.
Where a lot of the overall budget for Warner Brothers stuff goes, I mean, is to try and a healthy DC at Warner Brothers will also mean a healthy Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire, all of these.
It doesn't hurt.
No, yeah, it certainly helps. So a with
Doom
that
of Valeria movie would be,
but that, but I mean, yeah, if you look at directors who are already working with it, I'd say, yeah, I mean, to me, I'd go Denis Villeneuve. Here you go, bro. Blank check. Go make this, because once you start, what if, I mean, if it comes out and let's just say it's like even three-fourths as good as Dune or Dune 2, which is might be like Dune 2's. I mean, it's ripped. It's one of the last half hour of that movie is like as epic as anything in Lord of the Rings or any.
It rips. I mean, no, it's like, top five for me.
Yeah, it's so good.
Dude, don't get my hopes up like this.
There's no director attached to it. There's nothing.
It's also early development, folks. So this could get shelved tomorrow. I mean, like, let's not. We shouldn't say it's greenlit. They're filming. Obviously, it's early development, but there is an idea and a concept, and they're working on it. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, please. I guess it really all comes down to what you want it to be. I would say Doom of Valeria, Height of Valeria, Dragons, yes.
Standalone,
or the Age, or you go Age of Heroes.
I mean, that would also be absolutely sick.
And you're talking like the True Long Night. Azor
Ahai. I hope it's something big. And it has to be something, in my opinion, that is a spectacle. I do not want it to be a low-level politicking movie. I think that's better for television. Like, Robert's Rebellion, honestly, right. Better for TV. Better for TV. Do not do a Robert Rebellion movie. I would much rather see that as a TV series.
Yeah.
Also, we've never seen Game of Thrones in the theater, dude. You know, like, this is the first real theatrical movie project. So it'll be weird to see it in a totally different format. It'll be very foreign to us because movies are different. I wonder if George is going to make a blog post. This feels like a George blog post.
Yeah, maybe
moment.
It's not Villeneuve. I don't know. Well, I might be. I don't know. But I mean, anyway, that's who I'd go hit up, man. I mean, what's he doing? I mean, Dune Part 2.
He's a busy man.
Yeah, but he's one of those guys who really does. I mean, if you look at his list of the stuff he's worked on, like a lot of directors put out like two, like some directors put out like a movie a year or like two movies a year.
Yeah, but there's a reason why he's the GOAT. It's like George, you know, a lot of authors write a book a year.
I don't know if he's the GOAT, but I mean, he's certainly been hitting big on his last, you know, on his last few things. I mean, some of those people who only take like one or two pieces. I mean, he's up there for sure.
He's very successful.
There is another director. Let me look this one. Let me look this guy up here to see another director who I think could do it. And he's only done a couple ones. Is that Warner Brothers? Is that real quick here? Yes, distributed by Warner Brothers worldwide. So it was distributed. I don't know if it's Legendary. Yeah, Gareth Edwards. I could see him doing it. He did. Okay. Gareth Edwards did Star Wars Rogue One. He's doing the next Jurassic World movie that's coming out. He did the 2014 Godzilla movie that sort of like restarted that whole thing.
The one with Bryan Cranston?
Yeah, and then it kind of has now switched to like the Kong and the whole deal or whatever. But
yeah,
they're good. I think, like, dude, Godzilla vs. Kong was sweet. I mean, he sort of kickstarted that whole new series. But yeah, I mean, Star Wars Rogue One and Rogue One was amazing. So he has a Jurassic World movie coming out in 2025. So who knows, but that would be my other kind of pick for it. I don't know. Well,
hopefully it gets greenlit and, hopefully it's good. Right.
Yeah. That's what
we'll see.
So yeah, certainly have to see. Okay. Hey guys, with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 38, Daenerys 4.
I thought it was a Tyrion chapter.
Oh, I think you're right. What the heck did I pull it up wrong? Let me see here. I clicked on
we can't lie to the people.
I can't lie to the people. You are correct because I just clicked over. Gee, many Christmas. Hold on here. Chapter summaries. Jamie,
we'll do it live.
Yeah. Oh, I clicked the. You're right. It is. I clicked the wrong way on the wiki. You can click like
downer over him.
Yeah, it is a Tyrion 5.
Beautiful. Hey, if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time, and remember that winter is coming.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.